From Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live. My name is Carl. We're going to be Keon. Keon, how's your Thursday going?
What's up? It's going. It's a pretty usual Thursday. I'm still in California. It's hot here, but it's like hot, dry. And yeah, I wasn't planning on being in California this long. I think I've been away from Austin like longer than I've been in years. For this funeral. And my wife just wants to stay, remember her dad a little more. So we're still here. I should be back soon, but that's kind of what's going on with me. And everyone knows I like hotels, so I've been staying in hotels.
Just like random hotels or what?
Family. This is the second hotel I've been in since I've been here. I just like it. I like thinking about how they try to make your life easier being somewhere new temporarily. I don't know why I like it, but I do like it. It's a weird thing to like. But yeah, it's cool. I found a great coffee shop near my hotel and yeah, just hanging out, trying not to, also enjoying a different kind of stress that isn't work stress. It's more like life stress. It makes me actually miss work stress because I like that stress more. And they had a beautiful funeral on Monday. And it was really cool seeing a lot of family that I hadn't seen. Anyway, that's kind of what's up with me. How are you doing, Carr? You're not at the office right now.
No. Took the day off today to clean the house, do that kind of stuff. And just a lot of... I was looking through some old photos. You know when you like clean stuff and you start looking through old photos? I found one of my nephew. He's just like looking crazy, like in this Christmas photo. And I was like hanging them up like here in the hallway, and I never noticed it. And then like I look at my nieces and they're just like smiling like ear to ear, and they're Santa Claus, and he's just like looking nuts. And then I take a picture of it and I send it to my sister, and then I'm like Katie, I'm like, why does, what did I say right here? I go, why does he look so crazy for? Why is he crying? And then she goes, he does not like Santa Claus. And I go, I was literally like walking by and I saw this and I was like, I just started cracking up because it makes no sense. I was like, it makes no sense. Plus the girls are just like looking straight face, like not, like, I guess I just never noticed it before. And I just said it to her and she was just like, he was just a little boy. Like he didn't know. And I was like, yeah, but like, why did you send that out as like a Christmas card? It was just funny. Yeah. So yeah, I've just been doing that
today. That's cool.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's been a pretty very short cool. week this
Do you
week.
Have any plans for 4th of July?
Yeah, it's been a pretty short week this week here at in Austin. We're going to go fireworks tomorrow, and then I think I want to go to the zoo on Saturday, believe it or not. Have some friends coming out of town, so that should be fun. And then, yeah, just kind of take it easy and, just kind of hang out.
Have you been to the Austin Zoo before? Is it nice?
Never been.
No?
Never been.
Okay. Oh, you haven't been? I'm curious. I like zoos. But they're hit or miss, usually. Sometimes they're depressing. Sometimes it's very cool. And nice to see animals. So I should go to a zoo too. Let me know how it is. I want to know.
Yeah, I'll take some pictures and maybe I'll write a post on Stacker News. Who knows? We'll see. If you've never seen this crazy show
great.
Before.
For Animal World, Sicky love that.
Yeah. If you've never seen this crazy show before, it's called Stacker News Live. We cover the front page of Bitcoin. Check out our YouTube. Last week, believe it or not, the number one top story was node wars. Bitcoiners fighting with each other over what node to run or what version of what node to run. So check it out, hit subscribe, and yeah, keep up to date with all the posts on Stacker.news. We're going to go ahead and jump into the top stories of the week here on Stacker News. We're grabbing all the stories from up until Thursday. Keon, do you know how that how we did that this week?
Yeah, so we normally cover like Friday to Friday on the show, but because we're doing it on Thursday, we're covering Friday to Thursday instead. So any posts that might have been top tomorrow, we missed, and yeah. So you have to if you want to look at the stories that we're covering, you have to go to top posts and select a custom date range to exclude last Thursday, so that we don't, because we otherwise would cover like a duplicate story.
Cool. We're going backwards. So the number five story this week is, but Lagarde, Europe is a museum. This is from the Daily Economy Joachim book from Dan, July 1st, Econ Territory, 15 comments, 1,126 sats. Keon from the Econ Territory. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, this is from Joachim book. That's Den's, maybe Den, another of Den's pen names. I don't know if that's his actual name or not, but apparently Lagarde wrote an op-ed. I forget which. I think it was in the Financial Times, and basically Lagarde, who I think runs the, pretty sure runs the, the Federal Reserve for the European Union, effectively, I think is what Lagarde does. If not, she's like the Treasury Secretary, but I'm pretty sure she runs, you know, the European Central Bank, the equivalent of our Federal Reserve in Europe. And she writes this op-ed and she argues that, you know, the dollar is losing, and you know, maybe this is the euro's moment to become the global reserve currency. And Den in this article just leans really hard on that, and it's just you know, effectively calling it delusional, like because there's no indication that is happening, that the euro is replacing the dollar and as a global reserve asset. And there's also no reason to believe that that would happen either. And he, you know, just it, like within the op-ed itself, there are several contradictions. On some, it's, you know, it's like very, I think the Lagarde stuff, like these people are smart. So I think they're just, you know, kind of full of shit. It's like kayfabe. It's like in professional wrestling, where everyone who's on the inside knows they're faking, and they're just, you know, that, but they're part of their job is to present the fake story, the fake act. And so that's what Lagarde is doing, but Den does a great job. It's a really fun read, easy read. Deconstructing Lagarde's nonsense here, and then also pointing out that the way that the dollar is getting replaced in central banks is in terms of gold. Like gold is replacing the dollar in central bank reserves, also smaller currencies, and of course some Bitcoin. We're starting to see some Bitcoin, which is interesting, but definitely not the euro. There's no reason to believe the euro would play that role. I'm not deep on this stuff, but my perception of this stuff is like the euro is effectively another wrapper. It's like wrapped Bitcoin on Ethereum. It's like the euro is like wrapped dollars, wrapped US dollars. I don't see why it doesn't feel all that independent from the dollar itself. Anyway, I thought it was a fun article, and Den does a great job of presenting the stuff that in a way that someone like me, who's just kind of like, you know, this is all nonsense, even finds entertaining. So, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like Optimism had a post here. He said he fact-checked this with cover data up till 2024. Below is a relative growth as part of the whole of each currency index with 01/2017=100, because that's since when CNY got tracked. And it looks like he has the other currencies here. The yellow line is the, I guess that's the Chinese currency there. That's what he's tracking there, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think he's effectively saying that yeah, the U.S. dollar shrank in terms of reserves, I think is what he's saying. And then while the euro is stable, other currencies grew while the euro did not. So, yeah.
Yeah, looks like Scorby said, well, but they do have really good pastries and bread in general. Also, the gelato is better than you can get in the States. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I think this kind of like, kind of what you described, like everybody's kind of posturing in a lot of different ways. And then you have Jerome Powell still, he's still holding rates, right? He hasn't cut rates at all.
No, Trump is trying to get him to do it with all of his silliness.
I mean,
I heard. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you have more to say on that, but do you?
No.
I heard something interesting. I forget where it was, but it was someone talking about interest rates. Oh, no, it was I was watching a Thomas Massie on Theo Vaughn's podcast. And Thomas Massie is like, we can't, you know, it's not the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government aren't even control at this stage, aren't even control of their interest rates. And, you know, kind of, I think, mirroring some of the stuff Lynn Alden has been putting out, where it's like, if we cut interest rates and we basically pay people who are letting us borrow money from them and lowering the interest rate that we pay them, they'll stop letting us borrow money from them, is what Thomas Massie was saying. He's like, so the Federal Reserve isn't in that much control of the interest rates. If we lower interest rates anymore, all the people who are giving us money to borrow will stop, because they want the interest rates high. They want a higher return on their debt. And so it's unlikely that we see interest rates lower, is what Thomas Massie, just libertarian congressman, who is an electrical engineer and went to MIT, said. And I thought that was pretty interesting. So perhaps we don't get lower rates.
Yeah. Well, that's what we got for the number five top story this week. The number four, let's go to the number four. Number four top story this week is Claude runs a vending machine, decides to stock tungsten cubes, loses $250. This is from Scoresby, June 29th. AI territory, 16 comments, 2,099 sets. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, it's a really cool research project that Anthropic did, where they put Claude in charge. They call it Claudius, but they put Claude in charge of effectively running a vending machine. They give it a pretty simple prompt and $1,000, and they task it with trying to keep the vending machine stocked and make money doing it. And they expose for Claude a bunch of tools that it can use and people it can contact to help do physical tasks. But that's the research project they conducted. So it was like running a refrigerator, more or less, like stocking a refrigerator, kind of like we do in Pleb Lab. But charging for items, Claude could charge whatever price it wanted. It could order whatever it wanted to put in there. And then they let the project run, I think, for at least a month. It might've been even longer. So this is this post that Scoresby shared is a write-up of the results of that. And I would say we're definitely not to the point where this is feasible. I know this is kind of the future that everyone hopes for, is that we have, like, for instance, Max Webster likes to talk about one of the ways he thinks eCash mints might be run in the future, given that they face all kinds of regulatory problems, is AIs might be the ones running them and trying to keep and making them profitable and making them, you know, ungovernable, because it's not a human that you can imprison. because it's just an AI. So that's kind of, so we're some ways off from that, because in this experiment, Claude ends up losing money. He also ends up making a bunch of terrible business decisions. And then hallucinates quite a bit. At one point thinking they're a physical person and asking people to meet them places, describing the way they're dressed. He's like, meet me at this desk. I'm in a blue blazer with a red tie and we'll do this trade. Just like all kinds of hallucinations like that. He hallucinated having signed a contract with an employee that didn't exist. He ends up buying really obscure items. He ends up giving discounts that are like nonsensical. He ends up like stocking items that are uncompetitive, even though he's told they're uncompetitive, ends up stocking them and pricing them at uncompetitive prices. So in general, it's like a fail. The experiment was fun, but clearly Claude isn't ready. Then towards the end, they conclude what's kind of needed more that was what they call really scaffolding, which is where they provide more tools for Claude when they're doing this, and a better prompt describing more scenario, because they say that's been successful in other like specific applications to do that kind of thing. But yeah, they seem optimistic about the future of this kind of thing, because this is, I think, the direction things are going. So they kind of want to go that way. But overall, it's a really awesome read. The hallucination is really cool because it anti-hallucinates by saying that someone April Fool's pranked it. It was told that it had a physical body by someone playing an April Fool's prank on it, is what it said. It didn't actually happen, but that's what it said. Anyway, it's a fun read, just to watch something that's sort of like human like hallucinate and deal with it and have all these problems.
Yeah, I think from like a, I mean, just me like. Just kind of what I've seen running like a real world like facility hub thing, I definitely can relate to something like this a little bit. Like, it definitely has gotten easier with AI, but not because of stuff like this, but I would just say because of all the automated stuff, like whether that's like an Instacart or whether that's like ChatGPT or whether that's like Luma or like all the stuff that AI has been integrated into these apps. And the stuff that hasn't, like Meetup and like all these like Web 2.0 apps that haven't integrated AI, I've just canceled them, basically, if that makes any sense. And all the stuff that has integrated AI, like I've doubled down on. So like Meetup's a perfect example of that. You know, ClubLab grew its Meetup to like 900,000 members, but it just doesn't, and I'm cool with losing all those members. Because it's not worth the amount of money that we have to pay every month, because it doesn't have any AI features or there's nothing there that's like, it's actually not worth the money pouring into it, other than it just looks like social clout. Does that make sense?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, you see them maybe not improving in a way that other services are improving, given that they have AI in them. So the value proposition is much higher somewhere else. And so you expect that trade that you're making for Meetup for something else to pay off in time.
Exactly. Yeah. And so if most of these apps don't start implementing AI, then for me, who is running like a business, and you see it pay off with stuff like Canva, right? And then it makes your job easier. And it's kind of cool seeing this too, because you could totally see a point at some point where you could have, like, you could totally see Instacart making something like this, right? Where it could literally, you could have like an app or even like a mechanism like this that you just paste on your freaking refrigerator And then this like thing is like an API that connects to your Instacart app on your phone. And then you just ping it whenever the Instacart delivery guy gets there and he just knows what to do, right? Like on your refrigerator or something. I don't know. And it just runs this kind of project vending machine or something. You know what I mean? Like, do you know what I'm saying? Or it has a camera on it. And then you like, you literally go up to the thing at Club Lab and you just tap it like this, you know, and you're like, oh yeah, we need more of these. Give me 12 of these or something. Right. And it just automatically sends it to Instacart to order. Right. So it's like, you could see that world very, very soon via Instacart. It's just that all the apps like that aren't integrating AI stuff right now, they're going to get left behind very, very fast. And I don't think people are recognizing that. Maybe that's kind of what Max is talking about with the eCash stuff. I don't know.
He's mostly talking about like regulatory arbitrage because there's like you can't. You know, someone just hits a button, the AI goes off and creates eCash mints, and, you know, that you can't imprison the AI. Maybe you can imprison the guy who pressed the button, but maybe he did it in a way where no one knows who they are and, you know, pulls kind of a Satoshi. And then you have all these custodial services that are illegal to running in the cloud and are profitable and are like censorship resistant. But, I think that's that's I think mostly what he's talking about. But I hear what you're saying, where like this is the way that things are going, is like everything's going to get smarter, and that's the expectation we should have of things, is that they are getting smarter to the extent that they can. Yeah,
it's almost like remember how they used to talk about the Internet of Things for the longest time. Well, guess what? It's finally here. Like it actually showed up, and it's now. And there's no more Internet of Things. It's just called AI, and that's here. That's right now. And you can start doing that with like all these agents and APIs. It just got updated with a new trendy word called agents, but it's relatively called just the Internet of Things. It's what IoT was supposed to be, but you know, I don't know. That's just kind of my take on it, but it's really cool to see this, though.
Yeah, I think I think the IoT thing is that IoT maybe it kind of underperformed because I think it wasn't smart enough, and I think this changes that. I think this makes IoT work well is kind of the idea. Like all the IoT stuff that I'm familiar with, like smart refrigerators and smart microwaves and smart ovens and smart thermostats. It's all very noisy. It actually makes things more complicated because they're not smart enough to fix themselves if they break or configure themselves. But perhaps that does all change now.
Yeah, totally. I think it does. Yeah. Cool. The next top story is book review. Nobody wants your crap. This is June 30th, Books and Articles territory from Siggy 47, 27 comments, 11,096 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, Siggy is recommending a book called Nobody Wants Your Shoot. I try not to curse and follow your lead. It's basically about helping your heirs or people who are going to manage your estate after you die by getting rid of a lot of your junk that no one wants, especially, you know, things that are, you know, of pure sentimental value to you, and just making it easier. And this, you know, this is very like topical for me because I've been participating and watching people deal with the death of a loved one and, you know, kind of the unexpected death of a loved one and all of the kind of stuff that they have to do that they, you know, never expected to do. And so, yeah, I think, and, you know, beyond just getting rid of a lot of your junk, also just preparing for a transition where anything that anyone needs access to, they can get access to, is also very smart. Like, my father-in-law, they were running a short-term rental business and managing other properties and stuff. But he was the one who had access to all the bank accounts and all the administrative stuff. And when he was gone, that became very tricky for them to continue running their business and, you know, not hang their customers out to dry. So I think just, decluttering is also a big part. They have a big storage unit full of stuff that they're, you know, going to have to figure out what to do with. Cause it's, you know, it's not just that you have to deal with it when you inherit all of this stuff. It's that on some level you feel like they were keeping it for a reason, and getting rid of it is somehow like disrespectful to their like memory. And so you know, and people don't know how important that stuff was to you. Maybe you just put it in storage because you didn't care about it much, but you didn't want to get rid of it exactly. But for them, they don't know to what extent you valued it. So they might just end up holding on to it forever. And anyway, I thought it was, Siggy talks about this in the context. He says he's a bit of a hoarder, and he's found himself after a friend of his died who had a lot of stuff like this, decluttering more and getting rid of more of his stuff, not because he's ready to die or anything, but just because, you know, perhaps this made him aware that he, you know, just for his living self, maybe he doesn't need to be, he doesn't want his crap either. He doesn't want to inherit his own crap from himself. Anyway, that's the gist of this book.
Yeah,
that he shared.
Yeah, I think the craziest story I ever heard was one of my neighbors. His father. Kind of similar to what you said, like he didn't have any, like, I guess he like lost all connection with his kids. And so he had like this estate worth a lot of money. And my neighbor was telling me one time where like they randomly found him. He was like the last living heir of this estate, this property and like all this money. And like it was basically his. And I remember when he was telling me the story, I was like, really? And the guy was just like, he was just living in Austin. He used to live on the east side next to me in my cousin's house. And like one day he was like living there across the street from us. And then the next day he was like rich in Bastrop. And it was just like, the weirdest thing, you know? And then we go visit him and it was just like this guy. But it was crazy though, because he was married, he had kids and stuff, and he was very humble, like living on the east side. He lived like in the back, he had a mother-in-law's house. He lived like in the back of that with his family.
Rear unit. Yeah.
Yeah. And he didn't have a steady job. He worked like in the music industry or in the music scene here around town. So he would do like all the, whenever there was like, whenever there was like ACL or whatever, he would be like one of the people that would put together all the stages and stuff. So he would only work like seasonally whenever there was things in town, and his wife worked at like a bank or whatever. But I remember, dude, like he went, it was like one day and then all this was going on and we were hanging out with him. I remember at the time I was telling my cousin, I was like, I just don't believe him. Like, I just, like, there's no way like this would happen. Like, you know, and it was so weird because he would never talk about his father. And if he did, it was like very seldom. And then, and then sure enough, we went to his house and it was like a beautiful house and everything. And then like 5 years later, I was talking to my cousin. He was telling me that like, yeah, he got divorced and like, it like changed him. It like,
oh no,
I know. So whenever I think of stuff like that, it always just reminds me of that guy. Cause it was just like he got like, His it just got handed down to him, and it was, yeah, changed his life. Anyways.
Oh, yeah, sounds like not for the better exactly, but
even when
that does sound similar to that. But rather than getting, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, even when it's stuff that people would think they would want, it's not even worth it, right? Or it probably is probably stuff that you don't want either, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, maybe, yeah. I don't know. Some, I think it probably not for everyone. Probably some people deal with, like, you know, an airdrop of money effectively pretty well. But I think, I forget it. I think it was Jimmy who said something about like Bitcoin getting you rich kind of slowly tends to make not be much of an idiot with money. And you don't, because it didn't come all at once. I forget exactly. I might be butchering whatever point he was making, but I do think that is probably somewhat important. But I've known people who came into wealth who were cool. Who just, you know, they were chill and they didn't really do much or add much value back into society or anything, but they weren't like, you know, buttholes about everything and, you know, divorce their wife because they have money now or whatever.
Yeah. Good post. Siggy, you have a long way to go, Siggy. Don't be thinking about this stuff.
Yeah, but no one, you shouldn't be a hoarder. No one needs to be a hoarder. You'll feel better. You'll feel, in my opinion, you'll feel better having less stuff.
Yeah, totally. I definitely would say like once a year, like definitely throw away stuff for sure. Give away stuff. I'm a big fan of like giving things away. I'm a big fan of that. Like give as much away as you can. And then you'll get blessed with more things, I've noticed. Like the more you give away in your life, you just get blessed with more. I've just noticed in my life. So that's what I do. The second top story is what the heck is Spark? This is from Scoresby, July 2nd, Lightning Territory, 30 comments, 12,300 sats. Kia, what's this?
Yeah, so everyone's kind of talking about Spark this week, at least, because
this is not Light Spark, right?
Satoshi is apparently using them to come back. This is Light Spark.
So LightSpark and Spark are the same thing. Just real quick, just so I know the difference.
Yeah. So LightSpark is a company headed up by David Marcus, who used to run the Libra project at Facebook and then got into Lightning stuff and started. So he started this company called LightSpark. And so they do Lightning things. But they have a new product called Spark. Which is a lot like, if anyone recalls Mercury Layer from basically last cycle, it's a state chain implementation which allows people to share UTXOs. And so they came out with this to help applications and application developers provide a different self-custody, not really self-custody model than they could get otherwise, but basically allows people to self-custody or custody Bitcoin without all the regulatory issues. So Spark is like a technology to help you implement a Lightning wallet without you having to run a node on your phone or in your app, basically. That's the shorter description of it. So that's what Wallet of Satoshi is using to come back to the United States, is they're using Spark, which is a state chain, which is this technology that allows you to share UTXOs. But it has a variety of trade-offs. And that's what the next story will talk about some, but also Scoresby covers in this post. He describes what Spark is. He describes, you know, how it works, how it shares UTXOs. And he also describes the trust model and the trust assumptions in it. And effectively, the main deficiency in a state chain is that you're trusting the operator of the state chain to delete keys that would allow them to steal funds from you. And so that's the main problem with state chains and why I think they never really caught on. But Spark is continuing to move forward in this direction and hopes that it maybe gives people like Wallet of Satoshi the ability to continue to operate in the United States without having to KYC people. And the one variation of Spark state chain relative to Mercury Layer is that Spark is using a federation of, I think what they call coordinators, such that you only one coordinator needs for you to be honest, or you only need one coordinator to be honest, to make it so that your funds don't get stolen, which is a slight improvement over the trust model of a single entity being the coordinator. But there's a bunch of things to note on this kind of stuff. And, you know, is anyone running the software they're saying they're running? Is it open source? Do we know they're deleting these keys? If the trust model relies on it, well, there's no way to prove that they deleted information. Anyway, this is a product from Spark, LightSpark. At this point, several products, I think, given that they have quite a team and raise quite a bit of money.
Yeah. So I guess I have a lot of questions. So, I guess the first question is around Spark, just real quick. So I'm at the Spark docs page. It's like docs.spark.money, and it shows their Spark SDK. So it looks like here they're talking about how they're, you know, how you can spin up your own version of Spark, has a flow from 0 to 1. You basically can create your own token, basically. It looks like it's called a LRC20, I think it's called. You can mint your own token. Is that what that means? I don't know if you see that on your side.
Yeah. So there's two. Yeah. Let me. So there's like the Bitcoin version of Spark where there's no token involved. It's actually you're sharing a Bitcoin UTXO. But in addition to that, Spark has a token. They layer on top of this for people that want it. This tokenization system, I think, probably to allow for stable coins to be implemented. Like with the same trust assumptions. They're probably going to add like Taproot assets that are sort of using this token, I imagine at some point, or maybe they're going to compete with Taproot assets. I don't know, but that's like, it's kind of confusing in the docs, but I believe the tokenization is a distinct product from the Bitcoin UTXO sharing state chain.
Okay, yeah. So let me just keep asking more questions just so I'm on the same page as everybody else. So it sounds like from what you're telling me, there's a separate launch your own token SDK, and then there's a separate wallet SDK. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then the second thing that I also want to know, so I just found out today, it sounds like, so Wallet of Satoshi is releasing their own... they're coming back to the United States with their own Spark implementation mm-hmm. of the wallet SDK or the token SDK?
Wallet SDK.
Oh, okay. So they're not launching like Sats token and you're just flipping Sats across your wallet. No. So it's an actual deployment of the wallet SDK of Spark.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I'm on the same page. So I guess everybody's arguing because it's a state chain, and that's where everybody's upset about this because there's a trust model that everybody's not happy with compared to, I guess, Phoenix or something.
Yep. Yeah. basically the when you use these new different technologies, you're making there are trade-offs that you're making. And so just like how when like Breeze's nodeless liquid SDK, it has different trust assumptions relative to Phoenix, something that's only using Bitcoin like the main chain. And then similarly with the state chain, you have trade-offs. In the case of Liquid, you have this federation and you have this wrapped Bitcoin stuff, and there's a bunch of complexity there, but there's a variety of trade-offs there. With the state chain, Spark's state chain, you're trusting them. You're trusting the coordinators to do something that you can't prove that they're doing is basically the problem. And so while it may be that they don't have custody of your funds, they can steal from you under certain conditions.
Right.
So it may not be, it's probably not correct to call it self-custodial. And so that's, we always get in these debates about these terms, but people say that about Liquid too. You don't custody, the Federation has control of your funds. It's not self-custody to have LBTC. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just like, it sounds like okay, I get it. I'll tell you what though, the wallet of Satoshi, man, coming back to America. There's a small part of me that's like excited about this. I'm not gonna lie. I don't know, man. The plebs love Wallet of Satoshi.
I don't know how much latency we have here, but I was gonna say that this is an improvement. Like, this is better for plebs than the trust model that Wallet of Satoshi had before, I think, in my opinion, at least, in that Wallet of Satoshi can't unilaterally steal your funds. And you do have, like, assuming Spark and its coordinators are behaving honestly, you do have quite a bit more control over your funds in the case where Spark and its coordinators disappear. And, if it is like from a regulation perspective, allows you to effectively have the ease of use of a custodial wallet. And while the trust assumptions aren't much better, it does allow you to get around this regulatory stuff and have a wallet that's as easy to use as Wallet of Satoshi was without having to KYC and be concerned about all the privacy and other stuff that comes with that. So it's all trade-offs. It just wouldn't call it self-custodial we'll get into that in the next post.
I mean, it's a great thing. I mean, cause it's been 2 years at this point since they've been gone. And it's like that Batman meme where it's like, do you think they're ever coming back? it's a beautiful thing, man. It's a beautiful thing. I've been waiting for them to come back. I mean, these days, like, it was always the go-to app that you would get normies to download. It was the go-to app. There was no, and then since they've been gone, there really hasn't been a go-to app that you could suggest. And then but when Wallet Satoshi was around, that was the one I would get a normal person to download, and then I would sling them sats. That was always Wallet Satoshi. And I remember when I was using Lightning for the first time, I thought Wallet of Satoshi was real Lightning. I did not know the difference between non-custodial and custodial. And most normal people don't care. That's just the reality of the situation. And Wallet of Satoshi is so easy to use. It's so damn sticky. Like, it's just something about that app, like, that people just don't understand. Like normal Bitcoiners like us, we're going to want to use Phoenix and all these other apps, Zeus and stuff. I remember when I first used Wallet Satoshi, it was like, it's just something about that app. It's just so damn it, like, perfect. I don't know how else to describe it. It's just a great app, and normal people, use it. I remember showing it to my brother-in-law, and he loved it. He loved it. He was like, look. Because it had the animation and everything. And yeah, they just, I mean, when you have a hit product, you have a hit product. There's no denying it. You know?
Yep. Yeah. It is. I think the thing about Wallet of Satoshi is it's just dead simple. Like no one building wallets really comes out with a really simple wallet. Even if you look, there are a few of them and they did really well. You know, like Moon did really well, also a pretty simple wallet, although more complicated than Wallet of Satoshi. And then you have Phoenix, which is also kind of, I would say, you know, kind of a power user product, pretty complicated, not just from a perspective that it's using real Lightning. It's just from a UI perspective, it exposes like a lot of stuff. But Wallet of Satoshi is just like, you know, generate invoices, get them to be paid, pay invoices. And it has like two or three buttons on it. It's like, you know,
It's a ridiculous animation.
They figured it out. They really did. I think they did. You know, no one really made a wallet that simple. And yeah, it was custodial and illegal, but it did its job really well. So if they can bring that back with slightly better, you know, with something that's legal and slightly better trust assumptions, although not a whole lot, not really much different. I think it'll be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think so too. I think we'll be able to start getting normal, you know, people again be like, hey, download a Lightning wallet. And be like, yeah, which one? Wallet of Satoshi. They'll download it and then we can send them sats. Nowadays, like, you're like, yeah, download one. And then there's like, which one? Phoenix. Okay, download Phoenix. Okay, well, let me send you. Wait, you got to do this. Oh, okay. No. Then download Zeus. Okay, wait. How much do I send you? And like, you know, it's just like the whole thing. So, and it's not a fault to anyone that builds those products. That's not what I'm saying. It's just, there's a learning curve to those products that Wallet of Satoshi didn't have. And that's just the unfortunate truth, you know? So those, we just need really dead simple wallets for normies. Cool. Let's jump 100%. Into.
And so this is, I think, a move.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah,
move in that direction. I was just going to say, this is definitely a move in that direction where normal people can have easy to use wallets. It's not the change maybe that we ideally would have, but it's better than the alternative, which is everyone's KYC'ing into exchange wallets or whatever.
Yeah, the number one story of the week is no, the new Wallet Satoshi is not self-custodial. So maybe we talked too much on the last topic. This is from Blue Matt, Bitcoin Territory, July 1st, 21 comments, 10K boost, 2,881 sats. Keon, what's Matt talking about this week?
Yeah, I think he's just disagreeing with the way that people are describing the new Wallet of Satoshi, or what Wallet of Satoshi is planning to do, which we just spent a lot of time talking about, which is, it's not exactly self-custodial. It is less custodial in certain ways that allow you to not have to KYC to use it, but it's, if Spark can rob you, or Wallet of Satoshi can rob you, I think that is not, it would be incorrect to call it self-custody. So it's something else. It's maybe not exactly custodial. It's not exactly self-custody. It's somewhere in between. Justin Shocknet has been calling it trustodial, which trustodial. I think is probably the best term that I've heard for this, where you are trusting them to not rob you, because they have the ability to, in certain situations. But it is, you know, it is not, they don't have total unilateral control over the funds, assuming they're doing what they're saying. and assuming they're doing what they're saying, they can't rob you. So it's way more complicated than self-custody or not. I don't think, you know, the plebs probably won't care. I think they care. Can I get a wallet of Satoshi UX without KYCing? And that's the result that we'll see. Yep.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think that's all the plebs care. They just want clean UI, fast payments, and you know, onboard their friends and sling sats to pay for things and not KYC. Yeah. But I guess my question is more on the technical side. How is this any different than Breeze or Breeze and then even kind of what Moon is doing, I guess, on the Lightning side? Because doesn't Moon do like submarine swaps or something like that?
Yeah. So in the case of Moon, they do a swap. You receive a Lightning payment, and it's actually you receive it to an on-chain address. And when you send your Satoshis that you have in your Moon wallet, it takes on-chain Satoshis and swaps it onto Lightning, and that's how it. So it's not really running a Lightning node. Similarly, with Breeze's SDK, their nodeless SDK, they do what Moon does, but they do it on Liquid, which has. So one of the biggest problem with Moon was that they had high fees, especially when there was congestion on Bitcoin's main chain. So they actually people stopped recommending it around the time where we had the like big ordinals boom,
right?
Like 2023, 2022, something like that. And so Breeze is like, well, Liquid has always had low fees and will probably always have low fees. So why don't we use Liquid to do what Moon does in our nodeless SDK? And so that's what Breeze has been doing with their nodeless SDK. That Breeze's nodeless SDK has the trust assumptions that any product that uses Liquid has, which is where you're kind of relying on a majority of Federation members to, I don't really understand Liquid too well, but you're relying on a majority of Federation members in the Liquid Federation to behave honestly and honor, you know, your consensus valid transactions and your withdrawal requests and things like that. So that's the trust assumption there. And with Spark, I've been calling it Spark Chain, but Spark's state chain, Light Spark state chain, what's happening is kind of similar in a way to both Moon and Liquid. Only like the underlying chain that the swap is happening on is different, and it has different trust assumptions. And while Moon maybe has the best trust assumptions, where you're using on-chain Bitcoin, you kind of get the best of both worlds with where you're dealing more with native Bitcoin stuff. You're not relying on Liquid to behave honestly, and you're not using wrapped Bitcoin, but you are still trusting Spark's coordinators, which, like Liquid, is a federation. But in an improvement on Liquid's federation, Spark's model only, rather than the majority of the federation members behaving honestly for you, for Breeze's nodeless SDK to do what you want. In Spark, you only need one Federation member, one honest Federation member, to allow you to do what you want or do what you were promised you'd be able to do, which is that one Federation member just has to delete old keys. They have to delete something. Or that one Federation member, has to get rid of those keys, at least according to Spark's docs. I have not looked into this, but I believe that's true. I believe that given the way Frost works and the way they've implemented it. So really what we have is like a variety of ways to avoid running a Bitcoin node because it's a Lightning node because it's hard. And so what we want to do instead is we want to use a state chain, or we want to use submarine swaps. We can't submarine swap onto the base chain because it's expensive. We maybe don't want to submarine swap onto Liquid because it's wrapped Bitcoin, and you know it requires kind of trusting a lot, you know, many more people, I think. I can't say that too confidently because I don't understand Liquid super well. And so we have the state chain implementation, which I think improves on Liquid, not as good as Moon, but better than Moon in terms of fees and better on trust relative to Liquid. So I think you're in this, you know, kind of nice, maybe this nice Goldilocks zone. It may be why Spark has chosen to pursue this project.
Yeah. And then the other alternative is, I guess, Phoenix, right? And that's just running your own node,
yes,
leveraging Phoenix's LSP, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To get into that more, all of these, like Moon has an LSP, doing these submarine swaps, I would guess. So does Breeze. So does Spark. They all have LSPs. The main difference is like what's happening on your phone. Like, are you opening channels to the LSP from your phone, from keys that you control on your phone that ultimately allow you full control over the Bitcoin? And neither Moon nor Breeze's nodeless SDK or Spark really allow you to do that in the way that you can do with Phoenix. It's way more self-sovereign to use Phoenix. So if you're really using Bitcoin a lot, for either your business or personal use, you should be using something like Phoenix if you're technically savvy enough. Just because you have more self-sovereignty, it actually is self-custody. You actually can unilaterally exit, and Phoenix can't rob you in the same way that any of these other in the same way that Spark can.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think you nailed it right there with how you explained all of that. Absolutely. I think that's the clearest picture on how to look at this. So I don't know if you saw the frost thing that got released this week with the signers. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah, I forget what that's FrostSnap. Yeah, FrostSnap. Yeah, I saw that.
So I was talking to Nick in the lab this week, and he had a really interesting take on potentially using those as remote signers at some point in the future. Specifically around, you know, Lightning nodes and stuff like that. Do you have any thoughts on that, Keon, or is that something that's so far out?
I think in the future we will see threshold like multi-sig remote signing for Lightning. I definitely think we'll see that. I think that's sort of inevitable. An LSP like Phoenix, like Async, they have, I think, like $100 million or something. I don't know. I don't actually know, but they have a lot of money on their LSP, and they've described in blog posts how they manage it, but they do it with remote signing. But yeah, ideally you would have, you know, a multi-sig, because you still don't want one remote signer to be able to spend $100 million to make that decision. You kind of want a federation of team members within Phoenix to make the call, so that, you know, no person is going to rob everyone. I think we'll get there eventually. I don't know how it relates to FrostSnap. I think FrostSnap is mostly trying to do, like, make Bitcoin multi-sig a little easier, but
Could you see it even for running your own node? For even running your own node, though, could you see something that you would use a remote signer if it gets too big?
No, that's what Blockstream has been working on. We haven't really seen Greenlight shine yet. I know Breeze was supposed to be using it, but I think their nodeless SDK took off, so they haven't been spending much time on it. But this is another solution that's like waiting to come to market, I think. That just it's a little bit of a harder problem to solve because they're doing like the Phoenix thing, but slightly easier to use, but more complicated to build on the back end. But it actually gives you self custody where you have the keys on your device, but the node is running. Blockstream is taking care of the node running part, and the liquidity management and stuff like that. So I think that'll come, and then eventually, we could get multi-sig remote signing for people running their own nodes, especially if they have a lot of money on them. You'd want multi-sig, like you want multi-sig for your self-custody if you have a lot of money for security reasons.
Yeah, that's really fascinating to see kind of the Lightning space evolve in a way. It's really fascinating. I feel like this week especially, just seeing the Frostnap stuff, having those conversations at the lab around what that means, and then for the future of Lightning, and then seeing the Spark rollout, while Satoshi rollout, and then seeing kind of Matt's thoughts on all this stuff, and then hearing your take on it. It's just really fascinating this week around Lightning and the future of it.
Yeah, it's maturing, finally.
Cool. That's all the top stories this week that we have on Stackered News. We're going to jump into our stories of the week. Let's go with yours first, Keon. You had our Bitcoin treasury company's Ponzi schemes. This is from Bitcoin Magazine. Dan posted this on June 30th, Econ Territory. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, I'm trying to find it. Yeah. So Dan wrote this piece for Bitcoin Magazine. We've all been kind of reading along with Dan, all the Matt Levine posts about, these treasury companies, MicroStrategy, most well known among them. And Dan kind of calls Bitcoin treasuries out as Ponzi schemes. This cycle's Ponzi scheme. And he compares it sort of the FTX thing, where Sam Bankman-Fried, I think he quotes Sam Bankman-Fried twice in there. Sam Bankman-Fried openly admitted that the whole, his whole entire business was a Ponzi scheme, and like the whole crypto sector was a Ponzi scheme. And he thinks that that's, more or less what's happening with these Bitcoin treasury companies, where they're like, it's a Ponzi scheme. Like, it relies on me attracting, like the premium I have on my stock requires me attracting more and more speculators, and relies on Bitcoin's price continuing to go up. But Ponzi schemes work while they work is kind of a lot of the attitude, I think, of some of the people running these Bitcoin treasury companies. And so Den just kind of lays that out there and calls it out. And even something like MicroStrategy that we think is built kind of, is maybe run by a smart person who knows what they're doing. The whole thing does rely on Bitcoin going up and continuing to go up. And they are in some sense, what seems like kind of scamming people by charging them $2 to $3 for every $1 of Bitcoin they have. By the stock price, and like, is that justified? And Den argues that it's, he can't argue that he's smarter than the market, so maybe it is justified, because maybe some people can't get access to Bitcoin, institutions can't get access or whatever, but it's hard to tell. And for the most part, it just looks like a Ponzi scheme where it'll eventually crumble, which I think is a pretty good sense. It can't go on perpetually, probably, but it's hard to tell. anyway, yeah, I thought it was a good post. You know, we've all been talking about this. I thought he laid it out there. Strangely, in another post this week, Den came to the conclusion that he's going to put his pension, which is not like a, it's a, sort of like a 401k we have in the United States. He's going to put some of his pension into some of these master stocks. Like, I don't know how he wrote both those pieces at the same time. Yeah, that's kind of what's up.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I guess it was like a few weeks ago I called out David Bailey on the show, you know, and got a lot of crap for it. And then lo and behold, like, I think it was like a couple days ago, somebody in the saloon posted him admitting that what he was doing was a Ponzi scheme, basically. I don't know if you saw that in the saloon. And then was interesting. Oh, you didn't see it? How do you go to the saloon from like a few days ago? Is there a way to go to the saloon?
Oh, if you go to today's saloon.
Oh, okay.
If you go daily. I believe if you have it, it might also be saloon. I don't remember if I read. But if you go to /daily, DALY, it'll take you to today's saloon, and then you hit yesterday up near the date on the saloon post.
Oh, yeah, here it goes. Yeah, go to the saloon on the 30th. I'll play this for the stackers who are watching. Okay.
All right, I'm here.
I found it. It's on the 30th of the Stacker Saloon. Let me switch my speakers here so the stackers can hear it. Do you see it? It got posted by South Korea Lightning. Do you see it? It's like halfway down the saloon.
I'm looking for it.
Dollar USD market cap, so we made like $100 million on $1 million.
Whoa!
In a month, we're up like our investments range. Like our worst investment we've made is up like 3x. Our best investment we've made is up like 200-something x, and then everything else is like somewhere in between, like 20x, 50x, 100x.
Wait, so how did that? First of all, that's like disgusting. That's because it's on size too. It's not like, you know, you get a 10x on Tensol. So basically every company that's like, we're going to become a Bitcoin treasury company, we're going to raise a bunch of money and buy Bitcoin, you're just investing in.
Yeah, and we're helping structure and we're bringing in our partners. Like it's kind of like early days ICOs where you have like a posse of people you bring into the token. You know, like we have a posse of people that we're bringing into the treasury companies. And like we have the best practices like nailed down on how to do it because we've done like 10 of these now. We've done like 12 of these. And like we have, I don't remember how many we have in the pipeline. They're like coming to market soon, like 6-7 more. But our goal is to do one of these in every capital market on the planet. So Saudi Arabia, UAE, you know, Turkey, South Africa, Germany, France, UK, Netherlands, Brazil, Thailand, we'll announce Thailand tomorrow, Taiwan, South Korea, Hong Kong, Singapore, Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia.
Jesus, dude. Bro's just reading out the map.
I know, he's got a fucking globe next to him. You're making like $1 billion on this.
Yeah, no, we're going to make more than that. Yeah, we're going to make a lot more than that.
Yeah, that's why I was, let me switch over the thing here real quick so I can.
Now, can you say?
I can't. The audio changed a bit.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So that got posted on the saloon like I don't know, maybe like 3 days ago or on Monday, and it was funny because like I called them out like 3 weeks ago, and then And it was funny because we were in the lab, and then the guys were like, "Oh, did you see what happened?" And I was like, "Yeah, I told you." it's just amazing to me that there's other people in the space who have been in Bitcoin a lot longer than me, not calling him out. And that's the most surprising thing of it all, is like people that I respect in the Bitcoin space not calling that guy out. And that's the most sad thing about this whole situation, is just a lot of people that I respect not calling that guy out. And I don't know, but I'm kind of over this whole thing, to be honest. Like, I'm just done talking about this. It kind of just reminds me of like just how far away this space has gotten this year from what Bitcoin's really about. And I think for me, I'm just going to continue to do what I do, and that's just focus on Bitcoin stuff. And those people who want to focus on this kind of stuff, they're going to do that. And then there's the people in the middle who are, that's kind of how I feel about it. You got any thoughts?
No, not really. I mean, I think Den said it best. I think most of these things are effectively Ponzi's. I don't really know. I don't care too much. I find them kind of boring. I also find them kind of inevitable. You know, I find them, it's not what I would like to see in Bitcoin. Those are kind of my general thoughts. Especially, I think what's weird is like, I think Saylor kind of started doing it, like genuinely started doing it and wasn't a scammer. And I think a lot of these follow-ons though do seem pretty much like they're just like scamming on that kind of momentum. I don't know why I think that, but that's kind of the way I feel about it. And maybe Staler even has turned into a scammer too. I don't know. I don't think about this stuff very deeply or anything, but yeah.
Yeah, I think the way I see the Saylor thing is a little bit different, just because like Saylor was going through a 2020 kind of COVID crisis with his company. I think he was just outside of the Fortune 500, and he wasn't able to, for his company, he was trying to do something with it. He really didn't have a lot of bullets in his chamber. So it was either like close up shop, let the company kind of die out because of COVID, or try something crazy. And he tried something crazy with Bitcoin. So I think Saylor was just kind of, he just did what was best for his company. I think when you look at others who have followed Saylor, those are more just opportunists. And they kind of use Bitcoin as a cloak, the humanitarian side, the Bitcoin is freedom side. I'm doing this for humanity. I'm doing this for my generation. I'm doing this. I mean, you pick whatever you want as the kind of name tag that they say they're doing it for. But in reality, it's just pure capitalism. I would even call it a Ponzi scheme, Keon. It's just capitalism. And it's pure, it's greed. There's nothing wrong with that. It's America. You can do that. But I would say, people are taking notice. People like myself are watching. So I would just say that in the long run, people will remember. And it's just the history books it'll just get noted, and people will just say, "Hey, there was these group of guys during that time that decided to do this, and it was kind of frowned upon, and they got massively wealthy, and they were successful doing it, and that's just kind of how it played out." Or, which I think a lot of stackers are saying, that there was a time where these people decided to do this and they got arrested by the DOJ or the SEC because they found some racketeering or some kind of boiler room type of shit going on behind the scenes, and you know, they went to jail. So it's either going to play out one or two ways, and we won't know until it plays out.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's it for me on this. At least we got to talk some about some new Lightning stuff this week. It's not all Treasury company stuff. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm kind of through talking about it. People keep asking my opinion on it, but I really don't think they want to hear my opinion on it because I come on too strong on it. So I don't know why they keep asking me.
Well, they probably do want you to come on too strong about it.
Yeah, like yesterday I was hanging out with a friend of ours, and he was like, so what do you really think about that? And I was like, do you really want to know, or you just want to, you know? The next story of mine is the week in AI. This is from Optimism. So he's been posting like this every week since he spun up the AI territory. And I think this is fascinating. So he's grabbing every story from the AI territory, Keon. And he's like, or not from the AI territory, from the AI territory and from SN's entire site wide. And he's posting it in here. It's really cool, dude. I haven't even gone through the whole thing yet, but it's freaking awesome. Like, I don't know if you can use this for your Saturday newsletter, but like, I think for anybody who's like me, who's trying to keep up with AI, and or anybody who's doing an AI meetup, or I would just like look at this treasure trove of cool AI stuff on Stacker News. It's pretty freaking awesome. Yeah,
I think, Optimism is a real, I think is thinking really deeply about AI and also using it a lot. They're running their own LLMs locally. You know, they're using LLMs in a self-sovereign way, in a privacy preserving way, in a trustless way. So I think they're a great person to follow for insights on this stuff. They're not pessimistic. They're not optimistic. They're kind of both at the same time. So definitely check out their stuff on AI.
Yeah, looking forward to reading more of these. The next one I wanted to share was we did a BitX workshop this past weekend. It was really cool. So I took a lot of inspiration from the Nakamoto Institute, Satoshi Nakamoto Institute, and really did my best to try to talk about proof of work in the beginning of the workshop. I would just say, like, for me, I think what I'm going to continue doing is like really go to that website and kind of spend more time just reading it, kind of like scripture, because I really do that with the Bible, but I'm going to start doing that more with the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute. If you haven't heard about it, Stackers, it's one of Bitstein. Is it Satoshi Nakamoto Institute? Yeah. It's one of Bitstein's, is it Bitstein or is it just, or is it PR2 as well? Do you know, Kian?
I think it's primarily Michael Goldstein, Bitstein, who runs the Nakamoto Institute. I think Pierre contributed to it early on, but I think Michael Goldstein is the main person now.
Who is also a big fan of Stacker News. Remember when he visited you that one time?
I don't know about that.
Yeah,
he didn't say he was a big fan.
Oh, I'm saying he's a big fan. He did come in. He wanted to meet you. Yeah. I would definitely recommend checking it out. Okay, stay humble. I would definitely recommend checking it out. Save it to your phone and just view it, because I think it's just worth reading at least once a week, even if you're just like reading some emails about what Satoshi said or about how he talked. Even if you're a developer or you're just a pleb or you're a meetup organizer or you're a founder or whatever your position is in the ecosystem, it just remember, like it helps you remember why you're in or why you're doing what you're doing. I think a lot of us lose sight of it. That's all I would say. Or maybe you're so already ingrained in it, but it definitely helped me. So that's all I would say. So yeah, definitely check out that. Definitely donate. They're a 501, so I'm sure it costs money to post all this stuff, and I know they're going to be doing more stuff. So definitely donate if you have the spare sats to do that. But yeah, I just wanted to share that workshop because I leveraged a lot of their resources to put together the workshop. But if you're interested in that workshop, check it out. I got zapped a lot for this workshop, which was really cool. I also dropped it in the builder's territory, and I dropped it like 3-4 days early. So I'm going to keep doing that. Keep dropping more stuff early on the builder's territory. So that way the stackers get it earlier than everywhere else. There you go. What do you think about that?
I think that's great. I think it's pretty awesome. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. I've been curious about how hard it is to set one of these up. So I'll definitely
pick
it up and give it a shot.
Super simple. That's cool. And then the last story I wanted to share was the Peter Thiel Ross Douthat. Is it Douthat? Douthat conversation? Did you watch this?
I did watch it. It's the interview with the New York Times guy, right?
Yeah. What'd you think about it?
I thought it was good. I was surprised by the interviewer. I hadn't actually seen an interview done by them before. I thought he seemed about perfect at interviewing, and interviewing someone they disagree with, apparently. I think he did a great job of, representing Peter well while still not trying to misrepresent Peter or get him to misrepresent himself, but call him out on shit and get his thoughts on it. I thought he did a great job. So that was my main perception. I didn't really have, don't really have much to say about any of the content in the interview. I think there was it went kind of viral, I think, because a lot of people perceived Peter Thiel's stuttering around certain questions as him being caught off guard and guilty, but that's just kind of the way he talks. So I don't know. Yeah, that's my read.
Yeah, I thought the same thing too, because when I saw the interview, I had never seen that guy interview before. But I quickly recognized the same thing you did, was oh wow, he's not just, kind of rolling over for Peter Thiel. He's clapping back on some of these, but being in a respectful way. And then what was also interesting was, I thought it was kind of over, like you said, because Thiel stutters a lot and that's just how he talks. He's very, I don't know if that's autism or something, but it's just his tic, kind of like Obama. Obama does go Obama does that, but Thiel does the, he does these things. He just takes a long time to respond. We all have those little things in how we speak, right? So I did think that was really interesting. The Antichrist thing, I think, was the other thing that went viral, that people thought that he was a Freudian slip or something. I didn't take it that way. I thought what was more interesting was the, at least from what my take was more of the Christianity as being optional. That was more my kind of take, was from Thiel kind of showing his hand a little bit about that. But I don't know if that is how he feels about Christianity. I just kind of maybe I read too much into that, because I felt like that's what the interviewer got out of him. But I thought the whole Antichrist thing was not too crazy. It was just crazy that, I think the more crazier thing was that he wanted to talk about that. He wanted to talk about that because no one ever wants to talk about that. That's just nuts. But I thought that was kind of very Peter Thiel to want to talk about that, which was insane. But I like crazy shit like that. Anyways.
Yeah, I was gonna. If you're into the Antichrist stuff, I highly recommend, or Peter Thiel's thoughts on the Antichrist and you know what the Antichrist might be, you know, in the context of modern life. He did a 2-part interview with the Heritage Foundation, out of Stanford. It's on YouTube. I shared it on Stacker News. I think maybe 6 months ago. I don't know, but he talks in depth about the apocalypse and the Antichrist. That's basically it's like 2 hours worth of Peter Thiel's thoughts on that. So I highly recommend that if that's kind of what.
Yeah. No. I think I got his gist. I think I got his gist of the Antichrist, which was basically like childhood's end, which is we just kind of become this, everything's easy. We just kind of roll over and die. Uber Eats gets delivered to us. We get picked up. I mean, it's already kind of happening. It's a very sloth kind of way of living. Everything gets healed. All diseases are cured. We have robot girlfriends. It's like childhood's end. It's like everything gets fixed. You don't have to worry about food any. Like there's no like housing's fixed. It's just everything's resolved. There's no one starves. There's no hurt. Like it's just, yeah, it's like childhood's end. And then that's the Antichrist. That was his take of who the Antichrist is, which I thought was like, oh, wow, that's kind of cool. I never thought of it like that.
I think I think he puts forward like several theories as to what the Antichrist is. I hadn't heard that one from him, so that one's new, and I probably missed that part of, like, I wasn't paying attention very closely during that part of the interview, but the one with the Heritage Foundation that he did is, I think he proposed two potential Antichrists, and one of them is, I think the technological version that you're talking about, where things get really advanced, and, you know, that leads to bad things in some way. In that case, he was talking about AI and super intelligent AI and what that means and nuclear technology, that kind of stuff. And then he said, there's like this other side is like, maybe, you know, if you want to prevent that Antichrist from rising, the technology Antichrist from rising, then you need maybe an authoritarian world government to stop that from happening. And then that's the Antichrist. And so that was kind of the way he framed it, but I missed the part where, like, how he described it in this interview.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I posted this other post this week with, let me see if I can find it. Well, I won't find it, but I posted this other article this week with, it was like the last, letter that, Arthur C. Clarke wrote to C.S. Lewis. I posted it in the alternative territory, I think. And, cause they were pen pals. And it was about good and evil and stuff like this. And it's kind of what you're saying about like Peter Thiel. And I think maybe Peter Thiel's, I have to go watch that Stanford thing. I'll check it out. But it kind of, I guess what Peter Thiel's saying, like in order to prevent what the childhood's ending is, you need an authoritarian regime so rebels can rally against it. Like you need the good and bad side. You need the good and evil side. Always perpetuating through time. You need like the Star Wars type of you need that kind of timeline basically. And that's just the way of the world. Like you need that type of and then Arthur C. Clarke is basically telling that to C.S. Lewis, because C.S. Lewis was a Christian and he believed in those type of things. And then Arthur C. Clarke was very much like a, in the article, at least, it was saying that he was like a Buddhist or believed in like that type of thing and like all that kind of stuff. But basically, like, I guess what you're saying is Peter Thiel's saying that you need both. You need good and evil. You need both sides for humans to develop, I guess. I don't know.
Hmm. I wonder if you would say that. I'm not really sure, but it's interesting you bring up Star Wars, because that is effectively kind of what happened in Star Wars, where they kept talking about bringing balance to the Force and trying to find, you know, good Jedis. And then really what they do is end up inventing, or, you know, yeah, more or less creating Darth Vader, you know, like the darkest, worst Jedi. And so they were, in their attempt to bring more good, because they thought the balance was bad, they actually ended up, to balance it, they made more bad, not more good. And so you maybe you end up always end up in these quandaries like that. But I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. As I get older, I'm realizing you do need good and evil in the world. And I don't mean that like in a bad way. I just mean that I'm realizing as I get older, you just can't control that. Like it's not that you can't control. I mean, you can control what you can do, but I think you do have to pick a side, and it's okay if people choose evil. You just got to have a balance of like, are you on the good side or the bad side? And you know, I choose good, but it's okay if other people choose evil, or if people are in the middle. You know, that's okay too. That's what I've come to. Or even to those other people, they see you and they see that you're evil. You know, so like you don't even know there's that thing too, right? Like, so there's that as well. It's fascinating, man.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, cool. I think that's all I got for the week. Let's jump into, where is it at? Fountain Boost. Oh yeah, no, before we go to that, let's go into the top stackers of the week. Top stackers.
Top Cowboys.
Oh, top Cowboys, I'm sorry. Top Cowboys of the week. You got Coop. You're number one with Stacker in Hiding. I like how everybody keeps, I don't know if I saw a post the other day and somebody was like, Stacker in Hiding, and they kept putting somebody's name right next to it. I was like, that's not cool. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I meant, you broke up a bit there. What are you saying?
I said earlier this week I saw a post and it said Stacker in Hiding, and then they put somebody's name right there. And I was like, oh, that's not cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people do that. I don't know. You can't control people. You know, they're choosing the bad car. They're choosing the dark side of the Force. You gotta let them choose it. It looks like not much has changed in the rankings this week. You know, we have the usual top 10. Undisciplined, 117, Blockchain Boot, Gray Ruby, Coins Reporter, Public Enemy, and Chokey, and then another Stacker in Hiding. And then Dennis and Rothbard Fanatic are battling out beyond that. We are also Toshi. Even EK is climbing EK up the ranks. He loses his hat all the time.
Yeah. Yeehaw, EK.
And then Optimism. Yeehaw. And Cryoto Sensei.
Boom, look at me. 16 days, son. Wow. Giddy on up.
What a streak. Huzzah.
Got real Bitcoin Doggy, 11 days. Elvis Mercury, 10 days. Bell Curve, 7 days. TN Stacker, 6 days. Wow, look at that. Who we got in the bottom? Who's number 100 this week? Who do you think is 100?
Oh, that's hard to choose, because they're not around enough for me to know them. Probably they're that low.
What poets there? Number 100 is Quero Total. Boom, you are 100th stacker. There you go. That's the top stackers this week. It's weird because we do it on Thursday, and I feel like I remember better. So yeah, you're right. Nothing really has changed. Let's jump into, where am I at? I lost my spot. Let me jump into the top boost. The top boost. Top boost this week. From last week's episode, we got a Poopsicle. He said, you're not an investor unless you can beat the S&P 500. Otherwise, you're just a loser. What do you think about that, Keon?
You're not. Wait, can you repeat that for me? I think I missed it.
Poopsicle said, you're not an investor unless you can beat the S&P 500. Otherwise, you're just a loser.
Oh, you're not an investor if you can't beat the S&P 500. You're a loser. Okay. I don't know. Yeah, I don't really have thoughts on that. I also just don't. I don't know. Yeah, the definition of investor, I don't know if I agree with it. I don't know if being an investor requires you get a certain return, but I don't know. Yeah, that's my thoughts on it.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks for the boost, Poopsicle. If you guys want to boost Busted on Fountain, say a comment. We'll read it live on the show. I don't know. After I said that, I regrettably thought about what I said. Cool. Keon, what are you doing this weekend?
I don't know exactly. I'm probably going to be back in Austin soon. And, you know, maybe I'll watch the fireworks. Maybe I won't. Maybe I think I'll just probably just try to be get back to life a bit since I've been out of it. So that's what I guess. How about you?
So you said you're coming back to Austin soon. Have you gotten your California dreaming out of the way? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, for the most part, I think. I didn't really have California dreaming. It's more like, you know, California death, dying, management, help, funerals. That's kind of what's been going on. Yeah, but it is nice here. I missed a lot of the types of like trees and stuff that they have here and certain kinds of weather and the different kinds of birds. But yeah, well, I'll be back to good old Austin, Texas. I missed my routine, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, it's weird. Like since you've left, like the first week, I definitely missed you for sure. Like definitely you could feel your that you were gone. And then this week, and then I would say even like Thursday, from Thursday last week till this week, kind of got used to you being gone in a lot of ways. I don't mean that like in a jerk way. I'm just saying like, it's weird how, cause we got new people came into Plub Lab. So we got two new people that came in. So, but it's weird how like people can adjust to people leaving. Also I've been enjoying your couch. So that's another awesome thing that I've been relishing in.
We'll have to talk about that because I don't really understand why I pay office rent. And then when I'm gone, people effectively lease it for free. Especially you. I'm just kidding. That's all right. But at the same time, what the F, dude?
I only would use it whenever it was late at night and I wanted to jump on a phone call with a friend. So that was the only time.
It's all good.
But what was I going to say? Yeah, I definitely miss you, though. It's going to be fun getting you back. I know the guys have missed you. Plant Poet's completely lost. She's like, is Keon here? Is he back yet? So it's going to be good to have you back.
I miss everyone. So it'll be great. It'll be great to be back. And I'm so often there. I'm not even used to having to miss anyone except when they go away. So it's a nice change. Makes the heart grow fonder is what they say. So
yeah, it'll be good. Yeah. It'll be good to get you back in the lab. It'll be a full lab too. When you get back, you'll see some new faces. You'll be like, who are these people? There'll be some new people that you could, you'll easily get, some new quirks. Yeah. It's interesting conversations these days in the lab. Yeah. So it'll be cool.
That's all exciting. Right.
Oh yeah. What am I doing this weekend? Yeah. This weekend, fireworks tomorrow, maybe the zoo on Saturday, and then church on Sunday for sure. Yeah.
Full weekend. Wow.
Yeah. Should be fun. Stackers, you go out there, have some fun with your family, have some fun, write about it on Stacker News, and yeah, hang out. What does that Matt say? Live life, love, live, laugh, love, or something like that. It's like a funny Matt. Do that. Keon.
Yeah. Zap.